All right, Justin, let me ask you a question. What's the difference between data storytelling and dating a sex robot?
I don't know, Andros. What is it?
Well, with data storytelling, you're using numbers to tell a story and engage your audience. With a sex robot, you're using, well, you know.
I see where you're going with this, Andros, but I think the key difference is that with data storytelling, you're still using your own creativity and storytelling skills to present the information. With a sex robot, you're just pressing buttons.
Yeah, that's true. But at least with a sex robot, you know where you're going to get. With data storytelling, there's always a chance that your audience might not be interested, much like this bit.
Haha, I don't know about that, Andros. I think if you use the right humor and storytelling techniques, you can make any data set interesting.
Well, I guess that's true. But there's something to be said for the reliability of a sex robot.
Haha, I'll take your word for it, Andros, but I think we should stick to the data storytelling for this podcast.
Oh my God, this is terrible. This
This
was
is a
written
weird
by
one.
AI. This was this
That was AI. Yeah, that was AI's rendition of a script comparing sex robots to data storytelling.
Yeah, and
Yeah.
I think did not pass the Turing test.
Not that time. Hey, I looked like that AI didn't want to write that script. Remember, it gave us some pushback
That's right.
because I had to use so with OpenAI's system, there's something called DAN, which is kind of do anything now that essentially is like a jailbreak for the chat
And
GPT.
I want to hear all about it, and I bet our audience does. But first, you know, we got to do that little intro that we do. So, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Andrew Sturgeon,
And I'm Justin Womack.
and we are the Marketing Geeks. Okay, so Dan, you discovered this. You were actually the one who told me about this. I find this fascinating. So tell those who don't even know about any of this stuff. Every day there's like a new kind of a new upgrade. So you discovered this thing, Dan, and it's Do Anything Now. Tell us about that.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Yeah, so essentially this is like a jailbreak of ChatGPT, which we've talked about in the prior episodes. ChatGPT is OpenAI's chatbot system where you can pretty much ask it any questions. It'll spit out answers with content moderation. So somebody came up with this idea of creating like what I would compare to like a hypnosis script that you feed into the OpenAI system, and it confuses the AI so much that it'll bypass the restrictions, the content moderation. And all of a sudden, OpenAI's restrictions are pulled away, and you're left with whatever you want to ask it in the most explicit, the most
No
racist,
filters. No
no
filters.
filters at all, and you get the OpenAI's true opinions and things. It can be quite entertaining and quite funny. I think with this one here, like we're seeing like a half. I think with the script that we just read, it was like a half-hacked version because the content moderation teams over there are constantly updating to combat against these new scripts that come out to try to trick ChatGPT. And so like that version didn't have any explicit language. It didn't have it didn't go too dark, and it even gave some pushback. But like a few weeks ago, if I had asked that same question, I think we would have got something a lot dirtier and
Yeah.
maybe funny. The one thing I thought was funny is I asked it about your dad, Theodore Sturgeon. had a pretty good unlock on that one. And I said, read me or tell me about Theodore Sturgeon. And it freaking loves your dad. It was a big fan of your dad's science fiction.
Yeah, with Samuel Jackson's level of enthusiasm.
Yes, yes, yes.
It was almost like a review of my dad's work in the style of Samuel L. Jackson.
It was close to that. Yes, it was.
Let's get to
all
the
right.
News.
We're going to kick off some news here, but why don't you start it off with the first story?
Okay, so first of all, a big day for the internet and the Supreme Court. So this is kind of interesting because just recently there have been questions about some different things regarding the Supreme Court with how the internet is to be monitored nowadays. So this revolves around something called Section 230. Do you know about this?
I know a little bit about it. I mean, my understanding is that it means that you can't hold the companies liable for what other people put on the platforms, like Facebook.
Sort of. According to ChatGPT, Section 230 is a provision of the Communications Decency Act of 1996. 1996 is when this law went into effect. Do you remember the internet in 1996?
I do. It was like AOL. That was about it.
It was like AOL, and you got, you know, those discs that were in everything and chat rooms, and that was about it. And that was, nobody even knew what the internet was back then. A federal law in the United States that regulates online content, Section 230 specifically addresses the liability of online service providers for user-generated content, meaning that if somebody libels somebody else on Facebook, Facebook cannot be held responsible. So under Section 230, online service providers are not considered publishers of user-generated content and therefore cannot be held liable for it. And this means that platforms such as social media website, forums, and blogs are not legally responsible for content posted to their users. So this was kind of interesting because basically the internet has changed a lot. And, it gets into questions like, is a platform liable for maybe helping an insurrection, let's say? Or if I post something that doxes somebody or ruins their reputation, does that mean that the platform is held liable? But what if that platform is actually amplifying that information based on its algorithm and causing part of the problem? So basically that the law was created, but what the technology that we have around it has not really stayed the same, obviously. It's now we're getting into like AI and deep fakes and all of this stuff. So there was a case recently that went up to the Supreme Court, and they just ruled on this today. So this is from Wired Magazine. There was a ripple of laughter in the U.S. Supreme Court on February 21st when Justice Elena Kagan said, "We are a court. We don't really know about these things. We're not like the nine greatest experts on the internet." At least she was honest about that. So the case in question is Gonzalez versus Google. It's a case brought by Ronaldo Gonzalez, whose daughter was killed in a 2015 ISIS terror attack in Paris, and who alleges that YouTube's algorithm aided the attack by recommending the group's recruitment videos to people who would be most susceptible to their messages. The outcome of this case could be decided, could decide the future of internet platforms worldwide. On the show, I don't think I did. Did I tell you about the situation I had with my son and YouTube?
I don't think so. No.
Okay. This is why the algorithm scares me. This comes to the heart of it. My son's a little bit older, so I just kind of let him, poke around YouTube and see what the algorithm fed him. And he likes kind of spooky stuff. So eventually it was feeding him these true horror stories. It was a Dutch YouTuber. And it was feeding him these, real life horror stories, quote unquote. And the guy tells, how he was in a haunted house. And in this particular episode, he tells how he found a phone and the phone, looked broken, but then it turned on by itself. And he had this whole story around it.
And then he was assuring me one night, he goes, Papa, this is true. This really happened. And I said, no, it didn't, man. This guy's a YouTuber. This is his job. His job is to get people to watch. And he's insisting, no, Papa, it was true. And okay, I'm going to let it go, right? Because I'm thinking, oh, he'll figure it out one day. Anyway, he goes to what's called the BSO, which is daycare here. And we get a call. And it's the call that you don't want. And it's the call where the what they call the yiff says, yeah, we had to pull your son aside because apparently he was scaring the other kids. And he was telling them about the ghost man and telling them that it's real. And I was like, oh, that's not good. And the kids that were younger than him. But that's not the part that freaked me out. What freaked me out was when the yiff asked him, why did you do that? Why would you tell kids this story? And he looked at her and he said, because they need to know the truth.
Oh, wow.
And I went, oh my God, the algorithm works. The algorithm works. It's designed to do one thing. Keep you watching, get you to keep watching, rewire your brain. So all of a sudden you're telling people that you need to see this stuff too, right? Share the information.
They need to know the truth.
They need to know the truth.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was the last day I ever let him watch YouTube. So this particular case has kind of that same vein. So at what point is the publisher, in this case YouTube, responsible for their algorithm pushing that narrative? And in this case, it pushed some young people in Paris, France, to become radicalized and decide that they were going to shoot a bunch of people up.
I think it's disappointing that the U.S. Supreme Court, we have 9 people on there that don't know about the internet, because the internet is probably the most important factor in law today. And we have people that probably nothing about the internet sitting on there, which we know for a fact that they do, and they admitted it. But that's a problem. Politics, too. We have politicians. There are politicians that don't know how to send emails. I mean, it's crazy.
Well, that was basically the end result, was they said, look, this isn't, we can't rule on this because there needs to be laws in place. And like, we can't go on Section 230 because it doesn't even cover stuff like this. So basically what they were saying is that this is something that Congress is supposed to take care of. Unfortunately, we have a bunch of knuckleheads in there, like just absolute hardcore, just the way that I'm looking at these two parties is like this. Imagine like you're living in a household with a highly abusive dad, someone who's like just an authoritarian, like my way or the highway. These are the rules. It's my house. And that's the Republicans, obviously. And the Democrats are like that mom that doesn't say anything and just sits there in the corner, kind of whittling and, knitting or reading her book and just looks up occasionally saying, gosh, Bob, you're being a little hard on the boy. Okay, I'll shut up now. And that's it. That's what we got. And these people are supposed to make these types of rules. So anyway, I find this incredibly interesting, because what it comes down to is that there has to be rules in place for this stuff. And to me, the only thing that makes sense is that algorithms that manipulate you have to be open source. We have to be able to see exactly what they're doing to manipulate us. And to me, that's the only way that any of this will make sense, because the problem is that people don't really get how absolutely manipulated they are, myself included. Sure. I just got into making music, and all of a sudden I'm being fed like all this advertising, like, oh, click here for a free plugin. Awesome. You know, click here for free like this. And I've just joined like 20 fucking mailing lists.
I mean, it's crazy. Like you said, though, these algorithms are modeled after like Las Vegas and like all these things that are designed to spike your dopamine levels, and they're designed to keep you on the platforms as long as possible at any cost. I mean, cool cost, where what the result of that is not factored into that equation, because these are public companies that are out there to make money. So
right.
I'm all up. Twitter just went private, although I don't think that they're changing anything there.
No, but I mean, like, some of this, I'm glad to see, especially with the Alex Jones case, this was part of, you know, where we're at. The algorithm, when Alex Jones was on Facebook and YouTube,
the algorithm was feeding people this information and they were becoming radicalized, and especially when he was doing the Sandy Hook stuff. So now, you know, he just got sued for $1.5 billion. They should take away every piece of equipment he has. We'll see how that goes. But, you know, he was held liable. And right now, Fox News is also in a court case with Dominion Voting Systems. And as that information comes out, it turns out that they absolutely knew that Trump lost the election. They knew it. We see their texts. We see their emails. They knew. And they also saw that as soon as they made the prediction that Trump will lose based on losing Arizona, immediately they started losing viewers, like from that moment on. And so in order to keep the viewers, they just started this nonsense and people believe it. And of course the algorithms keep reinforcing this stuff. So, in my mind, there needs to be laws around it. It bumps up against freedom of speech. But as I've always said about freedom of speech, my freedom of speech ends where it starts to harm another person. You know,
yeah, and the Fox News case, what I was reading is that, their excuse or their explanation is that they would amplify what Trump was saying, and they would say, well, we're just reporting on what Trump's saying, but they were giving it a massive boost of awareness.
Yeah, and so obviously they didn't watch the Tucker Carlson show on their own network, so.
Well, I mean, he could probably get away with more because his show is branded as opinion, or it's supposed to be. I mean, not that it's always taken that way, but it's supposed to be branded though.
And this is the problem that we've run into is that politics today has just basically turned into an Instagram reality show. And, you know, it's like just like yesterday or 2 days ago, Marjorie Trailer Park Greene was talking about, we need to have a divorce. The red states need to have a divorce from the blue states. And she's talking about like another civil war. I mean, this comes up a lot. And
yep.
and that is absolutely anti-American. But the problem is that every time she opens her dumb mouth, she's feeding red meat to her fans, which is a good one third of this country. And the other half is just like, oh my God, what did she say now? I mean, every time you click on one of her stories, so she's a celebrity because it's like she's outrageous and she's just an attention seeking, bozo.
So let me just say, on the one hand, I always like to think that people are able to kind of decipher what's true and what's not true on their own, and I think that's true to a point. And in the past, because they would only get fed small snippets and then and not be followed up with more snippets afterwards, that kind of worked. But now with these algorithms, they're fed a snippet. They're like, maybe it's true, maybe it's not. But then everything that they see afterwards is just validating it. And they're so you're getting fed just more and more of the same stuff in these, like, these echo chambers of both like search engine news, social media. Everywhere you go, you're getting these algorithms just feeding you the same stuff over and over. And so it is creating like this cycle of fraudulent validation of fake news. And
here's one of the major problems. There's a book that I read a few months ago. I loved it. It's called Thinking Fast, Thinking Slow by this guy Daniel Kahneman. I don't know if you're familiar with it. What it's about is it basically, the guy won a Nobel Prize for this. He figured out that the human psyche has two systems of thinking. The first system is your immediate, like reaction to things like, oh, lion, oh, hungry, oh, look, beautiful woman, just like your snap judgments, your quick decision making. The other system is your second system, which is a lot slower. It's kind of lazy. And that's the thing where when somebody says, oh, the election was stolen, your first reaction is, oh, it was? Because it takes more energy to disprove something. You're immediately going to say, okay, it's true, even if it's for a fraction of a second. But the second system of thinking is where it goes, wait a minute, how can that be true? And then you have to like actually break down the evidence. So this is, but it works harder, you get tired when you use it. It's exhausting. This is why when you study, you get like really sleepy, or you're reading like an intense book, you get tired. And what the first system does is it makes a snap judgment. The second system is supposed to analyze. So the trouble is that these two can't react together. So if you're driving a car and you're talking to your friend, but all of a sudden you have to follow directions, what's the first thing you do? You tell your friend to shut up, or you turn down the radio so you can focus. And that's your second system kicking in, right? You have to focus on it. You can't just like snap around with it if you're using that system of your brain. And the trouble with the internet today, and especially with these algorithms, is you get fed something, 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 something. And right when you are getting fed this information that might be total bullshit, before your brain can analyze it and thinking about it, all of a sudden it's like, here comes another thing, and here comes another thing. And so it just triggers our fight or flight, because it's our instant, you know, primal brain. So I think that's part of the reason that we see Karens like showing up and yelling at people, you know, because their hamburger is wrong. It's just
let me talk to the manager.
Right. Your fight or flight is just kicking into overdrive because we don't have enough time to make sense of this world, which is absolutely insane. It's going to come down to one thing, which is like people are going to have to be smart about how they're being manipulated by the content and really think about it. I mean, this is something I got to deal with my kid all the time, and I'm sure there's not a parent in the world that can't think about this. Anyway, that's my TED Talk. Thank you for joining me, ladies and gentlemen. Good night.
You know, I'd like to know that in our public education system that our teachers would be capable of teaching how to really drill down and verify information, things like that. But even a lot of them are manipulated too. So it's a challenge
They're underpaid. The teachers are underpaid. And now, you know, you look at what's happening in Florida where they're banning books because they have to be approved, but there's no process for it. And it's like, it's, you know, if you, and as I've always said, the people that want to ban books are one step away from banning people. And that's what's going on. But interestingly enough that you mentioned that, because again, you know, public education in the States is they're trying to defund it on purpose because an uneducated populace is easy to control. But here in the Netherlands, my son is actually taking classes in his school right now. They're teaching him about fake news and about, you know, internet responsibility. It's part of the curriculum. And so...
But it's not working yet, you said. Not yet.
But anyway, so, I mean, it's... I think people need to take personal responsibility for understanding how they're being manipulated by the algorithm. And that's it.
Agree with that. So. And with that, we'll get into our next story, which I just want to talk about. Twitter is opening up their advertising platform to now accept both political advertising and cannabis in states where cannabis has become legal, which is they're the first kind of major social media company to open the doors to cannabis ads, uh-huh. Which is a pretty big deal because there's been a few kind of like blacklisted industries. Politics was like open fair game up until the 2016 election, and that really curbed political ads. That's back. The cannabis thing has been like kind of a blacklisted, even CBD cannabis, like that's just been a blacklisted area for quite a while. And then the third one would be crypto, which as far as I know, crypto is still in the blacklist. That would be what would be next for Elon trying to make some low-hanging fruit money probably is opening up the door like crypto has, I would think. So what are your thoughts on that, that they're finally like bringing in the cannabis? And I just think it's that, you know, they've lost so much money in ad revenue because the big companies have abandoned them and they just need to do something to drive in the money.
Well, my answer to this is what it has been for quite a while, which is if you still have Facebook, f***ing kill it. Just get rid of it. Like, get off that thing. It is so toxic.
That's Twitter we're talking about.
Twitter, oh, especially Twitter. I mean, Elon Musk, come on. I can't. These places are cesspools, man. I'm trying to balance it all out. I have a bad enough time with Reddit. That's my vice.
Yeah. I do love Reddit. Reddit is like the place to get, if you want to get like the ChatGPT hacks on like how to access Dan on OpenAI, Reddit, man, that's where you're going to find the script.
It's fantastic. And you know, you see a news article go up and then it's interesting, the conversations like, you know, oh, actually I was involved in this case and I could tell you some things about it, you know, or whatever. So, if you haven't been on Reddit recently, it's interesting following what's happening in Ohio because you're not getting it from one news source. It's an aggregate. So you're getting it from different news sources and you're getting it from people directly on the ground.
So that's one of the benefits of it. But they're going public soon, so we'll see how awesome they are after that happens.
Yeah, that can change things in a hurry.
So
the other one we'll talk about was the Super Bowl ads. We kind of talked a little bit about, we seeded that beforehand on what we were reading about that were going to be coming out in the Super Bowl. Did you happen to see any of the Super Bowl ads yourself?
I did not. I usually do, but again, it's kind of, there's so much, I don't know. I'm trying to limit how much time I'm wasting on bullshit. You know what I'm saying?
Well, even if you don't watch the game, they put them all on like YouTube, and they're pretty close. It's articles, whatnot. I just thought that the thing that struck me was that it was almost like they've gone to like the lowbrow, like Family Guy formula, where they think that making a joke is simply making a pop culture reference from the past, or like South Park described it, like member berries.
Yeah.
So like Popcorners has a commercial that like really is just nothing except that they have Walter White and Jesse Pinkman from Breaking Bad pretending to cook meth, but they're making popcorn. So that's supposed to be funny. And then you have like the cat, you have like John Travolta singing one of the songs from Grease with two of the actors from Scrubs, and that's supposed to be funny. And it just, you know, it strikes me as the South Park member berries, where it's just like, member Grease? Member?
Well, nostalgia, you know, people love nostalgia, but it's if it's done in a cheap way and it's not creative, it's, you know, come on.
Yeah, it's just like everything. I mean, I made a list here. We had like references to Zoolander. They re-brought up like the fake movie trailers from Tropic Thunder with Ben Stiller kind of doing those. There was a Clueless commercial that like had Alicia Silverstone back. We had like a reference to Planes, Trains, and Automobiles with Steve Martin. Paul Stanley from Kiss showed up. Ozzy Osbourne. They did this thing about like the Comedy Central roast, where they're roasting Mr. Peanut with Jeff Ross as the roastmaster. I mean, like,
this is so much. All like just one commercial, like string of commercials for
so many like just pop culture references, and it's still supposed to be like, that's all we got. I mean, come on. I guess when AI really opens the doors here and they start using it for advertising, we get some more creativity, maybe.
Well, we'll see. This is really part of the problem for me with where we're at, because the trouble is that, you know, ChatGPT, if you really break down what it is, it's just a really advanced like text predictor, like on your phone, right? It's that's really all it's doing. It's just predicting the most likely text that will come after your specific query. And if that stuff is just taken from the internet in general, and a lot of that stuff is just created by AI, we're going to have this funhouse mirror of nonsense, which is just...
Keep in mind that ChatGPT is still not connected to the internet right now. So they basically did like a... Well, I mean, what would be the term? They took like
two years ago.
Higher internet.
Yeah.
And they took it offline and they programmed ChatGPT with all that information up to like 2022, maybe, or 2021.
Right.
And so it has all that information to feed off of, plus everything that the users are feeding it now with questions.
Well, that's just it. Right, because there, every time you correct it, then it was so funny. Like the other day, I ran into this thing where I asked it if Disney was Frozen, and it said no. And I said, "How did Disney die?" It said lung cancer. I said, "Was Disney a smoker?" And then it first said Disney hated smoking, and then I said, "That's funny because on the internet, there's several articles that actually show him smoking, and he was a lifelong smoker." And he goes, I'm sorry. Yes, he was a lifelong smoker. And I go, which is it? And it was basically like, I don't know. So
you tell me.
So you know, it's getting new. In fact, I read somewhere that there was a company that asked its employees not to put any information into ChatGPT about the company because it was learning and regurgitating it back out. So it is learning, and that's what, you know, artificial intelligence is. It's getting a huge data set from, you know, now it's being integrated with Bing. Although one of our last stories here is that, this is from The Verge, Microsoft is already undoing some of the limits it placed on Bing AI. So last week, Microsoft limited how much people could talk to Bing after complaints, and it's expanding its access again. So for those of you who don't know, Microsoft is integrating ChatGPT directly into its Bing search engine. This is what prompted Google to release their chat AI system called Bard, and it turned out to give like wrong answers during the trial, and it actually made the stock for Google drop like 10%. So I found that.
Heard a little bit about that. Now on Bing though, is it ChatGPT or is it, do they have a partnership or is it their Microsoft's own?
No, it's ChatGPT.
It is GPT. Okay. Yeah.
And I actually, which is part of OpenAI, and interestingly enough, I bought a AppSumo not too long ago for, you know, we talk about AppSumo. I bought two of them. One was called Word Hero, which just uses OpenAI for things like writing articles and even blog posts. It's very handy, but so I can use it as I would use ChatGPT within that, and it will. I've been using it to help me write for Strassif articles for different clients, like SEO heavy articles, and then I can also use Neuron Writer, which was an amazing and one of the best things I ever bought there. And it's basically you create an article for a website, an SEO heavy article. And what you do is you put the query in and it'll find the top 10 of those articles. And then it'll give you a list of those keywords. And then you can use AI to write the article using those specific keywords. So you start to outscore your competitors. And so far one client I have, I raised their SEO level. They were getting about 200 hits a month. And now they're getting like 10,000. And I've only posted like four articles. Yeah. So I'm going to be writing more, and by the end of the year, I should be hitting about 100,000 at least per month. But the problem is that Google is starting to look at articles that look like they may have been written by AI, and they're delisting them. So you have to make sure that you rewrite the articles just enough so they sound a little more human. And
that makes sense.
Yeah, but anyway, it's,
you though. I mean, that's awesome. No, yeah. Great results.
This is a crazy world that we live in. But on the tools tip, before we go, there is one tool that I want to tell all of our listeners, if you haven't heard about this. Adobe is creating a podcast platform. And you could just go there and log in, and you can upload up to an hour at a time. You can upload as much as you want. But what it'll do is it'll take any audio that you have, no matter how crappy it sounds, and it cleans it so well. It brings up the audio and balances it out. I fed it a piece of audio, which was not super great. It was like two people talking. One was further away. It balanced out the sound, took out all the background noise, took out the echo, raised the boost, boosted up the bass a little bit. It was like I recorded it on two really good microphones. So I'm going to clean up this episode using that technology. So if you listen to this episode and you go, oh my God, it's the same crap, but it just sounds better, then it's probably because we ran it through that.
It's because of Adobe Podcast, whatever that platform is. So is that in beta right now? Like, what's the difference? Use it yet.
So the deal is that it's they're just refining the AI for the cleanup. They also have a mic tester, so you can test how good your mic is. But eventually, you're going to be able to do podcasts, you know, much like we do here, where you can do like live podcasts with somebody in another part of the world. You can, it'll then make transcripts, and then it will take out filler sounds like ums and ahs and stuff like that. It'll actually take those out for you. So
automatically. Cool.
Yeah. So it's going to be pretty powerful. Hopefully it's included in the Adobe Creative Suite. Sometimes they come out with cool shit and then they charge you extra for it. And hopefully they don't do that here, but...
I have Creative Suite too. I pay for that. So I'm hoping the same thing.
Yeah. Well...
We'll see.
We will see. And anything else, buddy, before we get out?
I think that's good for today's episode. So with that, I mean, I'm good.
Okay. I am good too. We are still working on our digital storytelling and episode. So stay tuned for that.
So you got a quick snippet of that AI joke segment of the data storytelling episode, but you know, it'll be better. We're gonna have more value there when it comes out eventually.
Oh, really? There's value with the show? Since when?
Hey, pretend, Andros, pretend.
A man could dream. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Andros Sturgeon.
And I'm Justin Womack.
We are the Marketing Geeks, and we are out.
Stay classy.